Hiyo, Wanju. Hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Whether it be loneliness, solitude, finding sanctuary in a stifled relationship, or waiting for a takeaway meal, or maybe one of the most precious things of all, the comfort in creating for oneself. Kate Fitz is shifting how we see ourselves on screen. Her short film Smoke, which premiered at the St Kilda Film Festival, presents Leanne McKessie's main character, a woman who moves through her day, quietly being hollowed out by a void that's emerging within her. Her relationship exists, but it's more of an idea than anything else. Yoga becomes an event tinged with friction. Her work, Restoring Art, is a rare sanctuary. In the title, Smoke alludes to the lingering presence of something burnt, the smell of the past hanging into the future. Sometimes this is a comforting smell, like incense. Or sometimes it's a smell that heralds a lie or the smothering of truth, like the lingering haze of cigarettes. Kate is an emerging Australian filmmaker who presents women who live familiar lives, rolling forward on a continuing existence that persists in the face of stagnation. We rarely see these characters on screen because we're so rarely invited to hear from and engage with women storytellers who present real people on screen. It's no surprise then that Kate looks to filmmakers like Kelly Reichardt or Alina Ledkina as inspirations for the work that she's doing. In the following interview, Kate talks about her creative process, about having learned from filmmaker Michael Rowe, working with producer Mickey Clark, and the notion of truth on screen, as well as exploring what her creative voice looks like on screen with films like Smoke and in her yet unproduced feature screenplay Peachy, which I got to read prior to this interview, and it's a really great read. I can't wait to see the feature film from it. This interview is part of the ongoing series of emerging filmmakers who are part of the rising swell of Australian filmmakers. These are storytellers who are collectively yet singularly shaping what the Australian film oeuvre looks like, feels like, and sounds like. In turn, they are forming a new language for Australian cinema, shaping what stories are being told, how they're being presented, and much more. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. And if you want to find out more about the work that we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Blue Sky at TheCurbAU. We're a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on support of listeners and readers just like yourself. So if you visit patreon.com/TheCurbAU, where you can support our work from as little as $1 a month. Really appreciate it. And if you could also rate and review us on the podcast player of your choice, every review helps amplify the interviews and stories from filmmakers to a wider audience. New interviews drop on Thursdays with bonus chats appearing on Tuesdays, just like this one. Right, that's enough from me. Let's hear a little bit of music and then we'll be back with the interview with Kate Fitz. Let's start off with a really basic question then. It's like, your interest in filmmaking, what was the thing that kicked you off into saying, this is something I want to do as a creative?
Well, I guess I've always been a writer. I studied writing, but I didn't study screen. I sort of studied all the other modes, you know, prose and poetry and playwriting back when I was younger. But in COVID, my friend was living in Mexico City, and her teacher is an Aussie expat filmmaker, which was Michael Rowe. And as the world went online, he sort of realised he could connect back to Australia and do a screenwriting course. And so I sort of, yeah, she suggested I join, and I did. And there was about 11 of us that spent the entire lockdown together every Saturday reading and writing screenplays. And it just felt really natural. I've always loved, you know, film. It's I love it for its economy of language, for the image. You know, there's not much art that I'll avoid when I'm feeling down. Like I can go to a gallery or I can listen to music or whatever, but there's certainly films that I'll avoid when I'm feeling down. And so just that sort of thinking about that kind of arrest, that arrested feeling that a film can grab onto you really interested me. And I hadn't thought about writing film before, and I just think it just really interested me. And then I found a real knack for it when I was in Michael's class. So that's sort of where it all evolved from.
We'll kind of flow into talking about internal stuff a bit later on, because I think that's something I can really see in your work. But like with Michael's work, I'm a big fan of Early Winter. I think that that's a beautiful, beautiful film. Very, it's hard to find, so it's underseen in a lot of ways. But I can see some kind of relationship between your work and his work in that regard. When you engaged with him and learned from him, did you kind of go, oh, this is somebody speaking my language. I understand what he's saying here.
Yeah, and Michael, if it wasn't for Michael, I don't think I would have, you know, stuck on and pursued as much as I have over the last 5 years or whatever. He was really encouraging from the beginning. He really, yeah, just was really supportive. And I think we, for whatever reason, we do speak a similar visual language, maybe because he's my teacher, but, you know, also he's got a very, I think, an unusual way of teaching. He doesn't, you have to sort of write a screenplay over 8 weeks, and he won't give you any feedback except for structural in the 8 weeks of a feature. And so I didn't even know if he thought my work was okay or any good until 2.5 months in after reading to him every week. And it was only when we read the whole thing in full, when we'd finished our first draft, that he was able to give feedback, because he just doesn't believe in, you know, taking you off the course of what you're trying to say with his own personal insights. He just wants you to write, and then he'll help you later, because you can't really help someone unless they have a full screenplay. So it wasn't until I finished my first screenplay that he really was, yeah, he said he just, how much he really loved my work and how much he understood it, and vice versa. Like, I think we do have similarities when it comes to visual language, I think.
I think so too. And also relationships, exploring relationships as well, which is something we'll touch on a bit later on. So outside of his work then, what kind of films or artwork with ones that left a mark on you that you went, yeah, this is the kind of stuff that I like to sit with? You're talking about things that, you know, films that almost trap you in that mindset when you're feeling a bit down. Are there any that like work as an opposition to that feeling?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I love, like Kelly Reichardt's a huge love of mine, as is Celine Shammar. And so anything by Celine Shammar, I'll feel really full from it. Even if it doesn't have her, I don't think she has the sort of, you know, guttural sadness that Kelly Reichardt can touch, but it's still really evocative and really emotive, but a lot more optimistic, I think. So yeah, those two filmmakers are huge for me in regards of, you know, vision and economy of language as well.
I think that's it. Like, Kelly is somebody who I've latched onto. I just love everything that she's done. But even something like Wendy and Lucy, which is, you know.
Yeah, I won't watch them. I'm not, that's when I, that, and that's when I was writing, I'm like, yes, that is what I won't watch, because I know I'll be deeply affected and probably cry for a week.
Yep.
I don't think I've got that in me at the moment. It's on my list. I'm never quite ready for that kind of film.
I know what you mean. Like, it's the first time I watched it, I wasn't ready for it. And then I watched it, and it's left a mark. And it is a hard film to sit there and watch, because you know what is coming. You know what might be on the way. And it's that sense of anticipation. And that in itself is such a heavy thing to sit with and process, especially when you're on the emotional journey and attached to the characters in that way. But it's also, as you're saying, like, it's knowing what you can connect with and what you are willing to kind of say, no, 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 no more. And I've kind of gotten that point with films where animals are part of it, dogs or cats. And I'm just like, you know, Does the Dog Die is a brilliant website, because I need to know. I need to know.
I know. Funnily enough, in one of my versions of Peachy, one of the early versions, the dog dies, and my classmates were like, no, you're not allowed to do that. So, you know, I get that as well. I respect that, killing a dog too much sometimes.
Well, sometimes it's done in a way that it's like, here is the, It's the emotional lesson for the human character or the audience. They've got to learn something, and the only way to learn from it is a dead dog or a dead cat. And it's like, can we try something new?
Yeah, because it's too painful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Painful for the rest of us.
Exactly. And pain is a useful emotion or tool in a creative level. But it's also like, is that really, I guess what you're putting out into the world, is that what you want to be receiving as well? Because you're going to be sitting with it for a period of time. And for me, that's not what I want. And by the sounds of it, it's not what you want as a creative person as well.
Yeah, I don't want gratuitous pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I definitely, still, like you said, there's definitely value in sharing the pain. But, sometimes it can be a bit too much.
So you mentioned Celine, you mentioned Kelly. Let's talk about both Smoke and Peachy, where you've got two women who are creative fields, like they're working in different creative areas. In Smoke, like they're in art restoration. And then what in Peachy is like audio art and radio journalism. And these are both really unseen fields that are kind of taken for granted in some regards. What's the importance of bringing those kinds of unseen roles to life on screen?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I've always worked in a different sort of section of the arts, always. And I always seem to be watching these women wearing big cans working. And it's just a really interesting, I feel like they have really rich inner worlds. They can't really interact with people at the office because they've got to be in really focused work zone. So you don't, unless you're working directly with them, you don't get to know them too much. And I just think it's interesting that, like you said, it's sort of, you know, holding on to as well, like these, they're able to hold these long stretches of focus and these long stretches of time, which I think is pretty unheard of and not common anymore in, you know, all of us with our phones, and I'm the worst for it. Like I can't, yeah, it's embarrassing, like my attention span. So I find it quite interesting that there are still people that exist in a digital world that have very long stretches of quiet focus. And like you said, they're unseen as well. It's like, you know, you're looking at these grand masters in an art gallery, you don't think of a woman that's been sitting and cleaning the corner of it for the last 2.5 years, you know, when you listen to whoever on the radio and you don't know that there's probably been a woman pulling that package together this week. It's just interesting. I just think that they're interesting people that work in these jobs. Their inner worlds as characters provide me for an opportunity to give them quite a rich inner world as well.
I really appreciate that. And especially even though Smoke is a short film, I couldn't help but think of, I think it's Frederick Wiseman's documentary, National Gallery, which is this beautiful documentary. It's like 3 and a bit hours long about National Gallery. And we spend unbroken takes with a woman who is tidying up and cleaning a painting. And then we cut forward to the painting later on, and there's a man standing there talking about the restoration process. And it's like, I remember sitting there, I was moved by the film, but I remember sitting there going, well, you didn't do the restoration process. We saw that somebody else did it. Why aren't you letting her talk? And she's standing there in the room. And it's like, why not? You're giving a voice to somebody who we don't often listen to, even though it's a fairly silent performance as well. It's a really internal thing, but you're inviting us into her world. That's equally important too. And I guess that leads on to the next state, which is talking about that silent state. She exists in the world and it flows past her almost without engagement. Like she's a passive being in a way. And you're talking about, like, you know, phones and being drawn to the attention and things like that. But your film, Smoke, is almost like it's a comment on the current state that we're living. She's not living as if she's drained of life, but she is living quite literally, just not really, you know, being there. How did you, like, having read Peachy, I can see how you've done it with that particular script, but how did you do it with Smoke? How did you build that internal mindset and you know, build that character that way.
It's really interesting because I was looking at rituals and what it looks like to be contented alone, but be disrupted by that with intruding thoughts within yourself. Was something, you're right, Leanne certainly brought us, who's the actress, a sense of detachment to the role, which I think helped with showing inner world, but also was an interesting comment on, yeah, not engaging. I'm interested in the unsaid, and I never thought of Peachy as a silent film until, you know, my producer Mickey was like, you've got to make a film with dialogue next time, like another, you've got to do a dialogue, like a film with talking. And I was like, well, there is talking in it, like there is a, and he's like, one scene, and I just didn't even think it was an issue, not an issue, but you know, just I was like, well, I have done a scene, I have done a film anyway. That I guess that's what, because what Smoke is about, like, you know, the things we can't say to the people that are closest to us. And, you know, with that comes a closed offness to the world because we don't want to feel too deeply and therefore we can't hurt too much. So I think you've kind of hit it on the head there about where it was built from, because we did have conversations about what it feels like to feel lonely, but to be okay being alone, and push and pull between those two things.
Yeah, I really appreciated that because I've appreciate feeling lonely, right? And I think that when people say, I like being alone and stuff like that, they're like, oh, would you like company? Or, you know, it's okay to be alone and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, I know it's okay to be alone. It's fine. It's fine to sit there and be okay with your thoughts and stuff like that. Being lonely or being alone doesn't mean that you don't have friends or a partner or anything like that. It just means that you want some time to yourself. And especially, that's why I appreciated the film so much, is that it's so layered. And I've watched it 4 times now. And I've just been, I've been taken like on different perspectives of this character in each of the viewings, because initially it's trying to understand who she is as a person and what she wants. And then the second viewing was understanding her relationship to her partner. And then the third one was about her relationship to the world around her and how she thinks. And it was on that third viewing where I got really, really moved by her in the yoga studio and just refusing to, well, not refusing, but opting to be in a different state. I thought that was a really powerful scene. And you don't say anything, you know, it's just what we're seeing.
And she refuses to be touched as well, you know, and refuse, like not letting a practitioner touch you is a statement, you know?
Yeah. I'm curious then, like a connection point to that, the title Smoke in itself is a beautiful title, because, you know, smoke is not something that we see after it's gone, but we can still sense its presence. It's still there, right? And we can still smell it. But there's a real pointed, like, thing to that title. What does it mean for you? Why did you choose Smoke as a title for this?
It just felt really a natural fitting. It's like it's what the conflict is about, but it's not. It's, like you said, about so much more about what's surrounding her world. And, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And what does that mean for someone battling their own internalness? It just felt really, it was the most simple and most obvious title for me.
Yeah, I love it. It's great. Now you mentioned, obviously, Michael Rowe, and we're talking, mentioned Early Winter before. The cinematography in that film matches the cinematography in Smoke in some capacity. And you're working with T. Oxford here. And I think there's a beautiful contradiction to the cinematography, which is there's warmth and then there's coldness. And that kind of leans into the title as well. There's warmth and then there's harshness to Smoke too. But how did you build that visual language for Smoke with T. Oxford?
Yeah, you're right. There's definitely both of those things through the film. And Tim was great. You know, as you know, this was my first film, So I don't really have the traditional, and I didn't go to film school. So I went, you know, taught under Michael. So I don't have those traditional ways of working. And he was really open to that. And I shared a bunch of artworks per scene, which gave me an overall sense of emotion and feeling and tone of what I thought the scene would feel like. And he really leaned into that. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, artists and stuff before, and Tracy Emin, the British artist, is really big for me. And I lean in a lot to her work. And there was a lot of her works in this storyboard I did. It wasn't a stump. It's not even, that's not the right word. It's like a mood board, I guess, essentially. I don't know what you'd call it, but it's a lot of her works per the scenes. It's really gritty and it's really intimate. And then, you know, me and Tim talked a lot about the camera and when it was with Leanne and times when the camera was watching her versus when it was with her. You know, same with Luke, who plays her partner. I really wanted the camera to be with him, even though he was the intruder on her world. I still wanted him to have a softness and a point of view, which we did, you know, we went back and forth on, but I think we've got it right in the end. You know, and in hindsight, it's quite tricky, I think, to do a silent film, but I think it's really cohesive visually. And, you know, we had a lot of constraints. We were filming this in my apartment during business hours, essentially. You know, it was just a whole bunch of stuff that he really just worked with and was up against. But, you know, he was really supportive and really brought it all together. And I think it really sings on the big screen. I think it stood up at St Kilda and I don't think the laptop does it justice, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've watched it on my TV at home, but I can only imagine getting to see it in cinema would be quite something.
Yeah.
And
makes a difference.
Yeah, because the emotionality of getting to see a bed or an apartment or even something as mundane as a restaurant, like that adds relevance to it. You're talking about the shots of being like with her or, you know, off her. And that shot where she's waiting for the food at the restaurant, you kind of transition then from being observing her to then being with her as she walks out. It was that like kind of that transition moment in the shot is quite a powerful thing. And it's again an invitation to the viewer to be like, you've just watched her, now spend time with her and get into her mind. Was that something that you were talking about with Tim?
Yeah, definitely. And just when we always just like, how close are we? How close are we to her? Was a lot of his questions to me as well. And thinking about where we can see her from. And like I said, the apartment provided a lot of constraints. So it was like, let's figure out where we can see her from and figure out the best narrative for that vision as well.
We're talking about so many great women directors, and there's a quote from Agnes Varda, which is, in my films I always wanted to see people deeply. I think I've written that incorrectly, but nonetheless you know what I mean. I always wanted to make, you know, to see people deeply. I don't want to show things, but to give them the desire to see. It's a good thing I've written this down. So with that in mind, Smoke feels like an extension of that kind of that invitation, the desire to see something from somebody else's perspective. You kind of already talked about this, but it's this invitation to witness an existence, to witness somebody just living. That seems to be the intention with Smoke, and almost to an extent with Peachy too. It's that kind of invitation to see the world differently, kind of a core thing for you as a creative person.
It is. It really is. And it's also, for me, it's about feeling seen as well. I feel like that, you know, in the era when I was watching films, and this is something about, you know, we've spoken a little bit about Michael as well already, but he, you know, one of his core teachings to us was just like, you know, the more absolutely honest you can be on screen and in your scripts, the more people you will reach. So just like go with that and the rest will be easy. And to that point, I very rarely felt seen myself watching films. There was never really anyone real or anyone facing the everyday sort of, issues with that. And like, that's fair, like slow cinema is a smaller, world for sure. But I do think that I'm really interested in creating characters that are relatable and situations that are the everyday that make people feel a bit more seen.
I really appreciate it too, because there is this notion that I guess we don't really look at ourselves all too often. We go to cinema to see somebody else, to detach from our own reality. And getting to see our own reality tends to almost happen in a documentary sense, but even that feels like a rarity. And so getting to see people just living a life, it almost feels European. Like a lot of the films that I've seen have, and a lot of the films we've referred to have been European films, and it doesn't really happen in an Australian context. We don't get to see it from this landscape. So it's comforting to see it from, you're building that in a short form here in a beautiful way. Has there been any other filmmakers and Australian filmmakers that you've been able to see who've been doing something similar?
Yes, definitely. Alina. Yeah, Alina. I really like Alina's stuff, like a lot. And hers is way more, obviously, like she has a very strong sense of form and camera, like way more. Like she's obviously very, very far advanced into her practice, but I think she's someone that's interesting and makes more, reachable work.
Yeah, I think so too. As you're talking about with Peachy not having too much dialogue, the immediate film that came to mind was Strange Colors, which is fairly dialogue-free.
I love that film.
Let's shift back to talking about your characters as well, which they're at stasis points in relationships. There's almost like a stagnation of what they're actually going through. And I know a lot of people are like this, that they get to a point in a relationship where things just kind of stop and you're just living. But they're detached from one another and, they may as well just be strangers who just happen to sleep in the same bed. That's a keen observation about modern relationships. Like we are so detached from ourselves, like she was already doing, going to yoga, which is supposed to be about reconnecting with your physical body. And she's detached from herself. She's detached from her partner. Can you expand on that notion of that detachment in a relationship?
Yeah, definitely. And, we've sort of spoken about it, but I think it's really, again, it's loneliness is really common. But I also don't think that people are very honest with each other. And so I don't think that we, because I think it's like, I was thinking about this. I'm like, oh, is it because we're worried about being judged? And I'm like, no, I think it's because we're worried about fear of not having that honesty returned and then being left out in the cold with this statement of, I'm alone. I feel lonely with my partner. Like it's such a big thing to admit to someone. And I think I think there's definitely conversations and there's a lot more about, being honest and being true and authentic and all that sort of thing. But I think when you're staring down the life of like a very long shared existence with someone, the more the years go on and the more that you and they reveal themselves to you, it can be quite a lonely experience when you've grown out of being with someone, but you're still living together, like you said. And I think it's very, I think it's a relatable thing that we don't really talk about too much.
Because I think for a lot of relationships, depends on how well conversation goes, right? And honesty and truth, I guess, is another thing of being open with the other person. And usually when we start dating with somebody, we're putting on a front and we're trying to entice them into a relationship. I like you, you like me, let's see how well this goes. And then you're almost stuck in that in some regards. Like, not everybody's like that, but for a lot of people, you get stuck in that kind of the forward-facing thing of like, this is who I might be, but I'm actually somebody completely different. And now we've been going together for a year, 2 years, and I'm just stuck in this. And that's hard.
Yeah, and I think it's really, I think you can outgrow people and you can not want to let go. What Peachy's about, like, it's just about not really being able to let go of someone, even though it's not right anymore. That's one of the theme, one of the things anyway. But I think it's very sad. It's a very sad thing, you know, when you've shared a life with someone and it's got to end, and no one really knows how to pull the trigger when you're that far in, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's the sunk cost fallacy of like, go, oh, just continue on with this until that's it. And it's hard.
Yeah.
So in both Smoke and Peachy, you're exploring truth in relationships. And that's kind of what we're talking about, is that truth and honesty, which is really important. Mm. But I'm curious for you as a creative thing, what does truth mean?
Well, gosh, I don't know. I mean, it means it's about being as honest as I can be, like, you know, on paper, and maybe even saying the things that I don't even say to my therapist, you know, like just putting it all out there, really. And it was Michael. It was like I said, it was like, you know, got to be as true as you can. It resonated with me. And I thought, okay, well, I'll write the rawness of something then. And I'll write it out as it looks instead of trying to make it look better. I think it's about, yeah, just not trying to inflate or make things more dramatic either than what they are, because life's not that dramatic, you know. Like, well, that's not true. Life, the world's very dramatic, but, you know, us in our day-to-day lives, life's not very dramatic, you know.
Yeah, the minute-to-minute occurrence of...
Yeah.
It's, you know, you're not...
No, it's an oxymoron saying that, but that's kind of how I felt at the time.
No, I think it's right, because it's this notion of, you know, drama is like, it's not hanging off the edge of a cliff, right? It's just existence. Yeah, no. And
that's right. And that's not the stuff that, you know, us mere mortals or regular people have to worry about. It's about, how do I hold on to my wife, or am I going to have a relationship with my mother, or it's these things that sort of occupy backs of your minds, I think, that are interesting.
So when you're writing a script for Smoke or for Peachy and you're putting these things in there, these emotional things, that is an emotional truth for yourself and for the characters, does that surprise you when you sit back and you reread it and you're like, I didn't realize I put that in there?
Yeah, it's so funny. I was reading an older script with my producer, Mickey. Well, it might even have been a later draft. Anyway, it might have been a later draft of Peachy, actually. And it doesn't matter. Sorry, I'm getting off track. But I remember that I was like, oh, that's actually it's quite sad, isn't it? Like, and he's like, yeah, it's really sad. I don't know if I realised it at the time, because, you know, like when you're going through something, you don't have the full, like, you don't have the 360 view of going, oh, I was really not in a good place, because you're just living in it and you're just in the thick of it. So I think that's what it's like when I'm writing. I'm not thinking, yeah, this is going to be really sad. This is going to make people feel something really deep. Do you know what I mean? It's just sort of what happens in the script. It's not until much later that I'm sort of can have that step back where I'm like, oh, I feel bad for I feel bad for that character or something.
Yeah. Know? And I think that's it, is that stepping back is sometimes, it's something we do in thought, right? And it's something we do when we're revisiting memories. And
yeah, totally.
It's hard, right? But it's hard to also present that on screen. And I think that's what makes Smoke work so well, is that you are inviting us to revisit her memories on screen. We can only imagine what the past has been like for her and what her future might be like. But we're still invited just because of what Leanne's able to do with her performance. What's it like working with somebody like Leanne?
It's pretty intimidating. She knows her stuff. She's pretty, no, that's not fair, not intimidating, but she's just so good that I just felt, you know, she was so easy. Like, we just went for lots of walks and we talked about all these things that we've spoken about today. She was very generous and she shared a lot with me. And I gave her, like, you know, the very root, honest things of the scenes. And then I just let her do her thing, really.
because she's so good. But then also,
She's
yeah. And then Luke, who's not in it much, but he's still got quite an impact there.
so good. Yeah, he's so great.
How did you build that
I
character with
think,
him?
yeah, Luke was more wanting to know, like, where's he been, what's been going on. Like, Luke really wanted a bit of backstory, so we worked on that together. And then Luke's really great. He's so, again, so generous. Like, he's really good at offering. So he wanted to say, well, what about we do this and let me go for this, and because I was really conscious of the intimacy on screen that he was participating in. He was just really, really open and really up for it, and really wanted it to look as realistic and sound as realistic as possible. And he definitely softened the character in the one scene of dialogue. It wasn't those sort of, we spoke about a kiss at the end, but all of his little moments and lingers and expressions, it's all him, like he really gave a lot of heart to that character, I thought, even though it's such a short time on screen.
I kind of touched on the aspect of smoke before too, but I'm curious on a sensual level or a textual level for the actors, the smell of the room, like that feels like a real kind of shift point we see on screen. Was that something that you had on set?
The
Yeah,
smoke
like the
or
smell of smoke, was that something?
well, bless Luke, he was smoking, those awful
Oh,
herbal
yes.
cigarettes. So like Nag Champa on whatever it was, I felt sorry for him. He needed a half a block of chocolate straight afterwards just to get that taste out of his mouth. It's funny because we shot in sequential order. So the bedroom scene was the very last scene we were shooting at the end of 4 days, 3 nights. So it was definitely a bit of tiredness, and everyone was at the end in the air, which I think kind of helped because it's a very deflated ending. But it was only the four. It was just such a small room. It was only myself and Tim and Kevin, the sound guy, in the room. No one else could fit. So it felt very intimate as well.
Yeah, that comes across on screen. So you mentioned St Kilda. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was really great. I didn't really know what to expect. But I felt really buoyed by being there, and the festival director Richard had really curated all the films that were shown in this session, which was the Drama Showcase one, were really connected in sense of mood and the way they all sort of pegged up, and what is it, like ratchet, they all sort of scratched at the surface until an ending came, and they all felt very connected. So it was really, I felt really great to be a part of that because I thought all the films were really great. And then he all called us up on stage for an unexpected, unannounced Q&A with each of the filmmakers. So I wasn't expecting that, but it was actually quite nice to talk, as it has been today, about, these things that I have to say, or these ideas I'm trying to put into a visual language. Like, it was quite a nice, felt like an arrival moment for me as a filmmaker. Which, I know it's just a festival and just a short film, but it felt really like it was a little moment in the sand for me going, oh, okay, you can keep going,
Yeah, I mean, I love St Kilda. I think that they do a great job, but I push back against the notion that it's just a short film. Like to me, this part of what I try and do at least is to spotlight short films as much as possible because they've been some of the best films that I've ever seen. Like take away the word short, they're still a film, right?
That's fair. No, and they all had an effect. All these films we watched were great.
Yeah, like there's it means a lot to be able to invite somebody into a world, encourage them to feel a feeling and to say, let's sit with that for 15 minutes and then I'm gonna let you go and take your time and think about it. And that's what you've done with Smoke, where it's just like, here's an invite to this world, let's see how it goes, and then go on your way and then try and see the world a little bit differently. And that's why I think that short films are so valuable and important because it's not just a matter of being succinct and trying to get a story across, but it's, as all films do, it's about conveying an emotion. And the immediacy of trying to of getting an audience to an emotion is phenomenal. You know, like, and you earn that journey to those emotions as well, which I think is really important too. So hats off to you, because it's a massive achievement to be able to get your work together, to go from script to filming and stuff, and then, you know, to stand up in front of a crowd in St Kilda is phenomenal as well. So
yeah, it was. I think, you know, you always downplay your own stuff, but it was certainly a really great experience, and it was really, yeah, it felt like
That's a moment. That's good, yeah. So lead into wrapping up, you know, you're an Australian filmmaker. You're an emerging talent. You're creating stories on screen which are what you want to see. So with that in mind, what does it mean to be an Australian filmmaker working right now?
Oh, gosh. Andrew, I don't class myself as anything. Isn't that funny? I look at emerging screen filmmakers of they're on their way. Uh-huh, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. I don't feel like I'm quite on my way yet. I feel like I'm probably that group, what is it, the grassroots group at the very start, sort of in the weeds, you know, a step or two behind. But I think I am trying to make things, and I am trying to speak about my ideas. And I think that's what it means for me. Yeah, is connection. And the more people I talk to about my ideas and the things I want to say, the more connections that I get, that feedback, and people say, yeah, that's interesting, I've thought about that too. So I guess that's what it means to me, is just about, yeah, speaking about these things to people and feeling that two-way response back.
I mean, we've talked so much about loneliness, and that's part of the reason why I love watching films, is because, and especially, I mean, huge advocate for going to see films by yourself in the cinema. There's nothing better than there's nothing better than that, right? Because suddenly you're not alone, and it's not about being alone with having somebody sitting next to you. It's about having a connection with what you see on screen.
Yeah, absolutely. I love doing that, and I feel really connected to myself when I go to the cinema alone.
Same. And it surprises you as well. Like,
first time it's a bit scary, but then it becomes a bit of a ritual.
Yeah. And I think like for us here in Western Australia, we don't get very many Kelly Reichardt films on screen. And so I got to see, I think the only, there's three films that have been screened of hers here in WA, which is Meek's Cut Off, First Cow, and then Showing Up. So we didn't get to see Wendy and Lucy in the cinema, but I'd already had the DVD and I watched it a couple of times at home. And I was a bit of a masochist at that stage of like, oh, I'm just going to put myself through misery. And then when Meek's Cut Off came out, I went to go and see that by myself. And just this journey that she takes us on screen. And I felt a rare kind of connection, which, you know, you don't often get that kind of experience of just feeling like you're nurtured by a filmmaker. And that's a really hard thing to do. But it's also that comfort of going to see it by yourself and then having that feeling of being supported and guided and things like that. Are there any titles or films that come to mind that you've had a similar kind of experience?
I went by myself to see The Killing of Two Lovers. I don't know. And I was just so wrapped up in this couple and this guy. Yeah, I just felt, I don't know if nurtured is the right word for that experience, but I was really with them. And I do remember at the end of it, just being there on my own. And, you know, it was just this great end. I thought it was one of the best endings of an indie film I've ever seen, and it was just really moving. And the soundtrack, because the guy he works with, his musical director, is phenomenal. So it was just this really all-encompassing experience. You know, I had like my wine, so I had like my sense of taste taken care of, and I had that beautiful soundtrack and the darkness, and, you know, I could feel my feet on the floor. And so it was just this all-body experience. I feel like it kind of, the moment would have been broken if I'd turn to someone at the end and be like, what did you think? You know, it was kind of nice to not really, it's just what I think.
Yeah, I love that film. And I'm very fortunate that I've gotten to be able to interview Robert twice. So for that and his follow-up film, Joseph Chambers. But he's a lovely, generous conversation person. Yeah, and it would not surprise you as well that he's greatly influenced by Kelly Reichardt as well.
I can. The second film, I felt that especially.
Yeah,
which was very terrifying and sad.
Yeah,
as well.
But also kind of comedic in some regards.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it was a bit of a comedy of errors, wasn't it?
It's just surprising this kind of tonal navigation of things. But yeah.
Yeah, I really like
it. Yeah, so did I. Yeah. This has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you, Kate, for...
Thank you so much, and I appreciate your really considerate and thoughtful questions and conversation.
Thanks for listening to this chat with Kate Fitz and talking about her short film Smoke, which is now out in the festival circuit, so keep your eyes out. For other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review, and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and I'll see you on the next.